You're listening to the Ideas Energized podcast powered by LARTA Institute. LARTA is a Los Angeles-based nonprofit organization whose mission is to help entrepreneurs bring their early-stage innovations in agriculture, energy, science, and technology to global markets. Learn more at LARTA.org. That's LARTA.org. This episode is part of a special series that will preview the topics and people that will drive the important discussions at this year's Ag Innovation Showcase, which will be held virtually for the first time this August 27th and 28th. Our hosts for the special series are Michael Reed Dimock and Roger Wasson. Michael is the host of the podcast Flipping the Table, featuring honest conversations about food, farming, and the future. Roger is the host of Farm to Table Talk, which brings listeners ideas, insights, and journeys from farm to table. This series was made possible through the sponsorship of OCP North America, the U.S. subsidiary of the OCP Group, a global leader in plant nutrition and soil fertility solutions.
Welcome to Ideas Energized, powered by LARTA Institute, a podcast featuring innovators who will share their latest initiatives at LARTA's upcoming Ag Innovation Showcase, live online, August 27th and 28th. I'm Roger Wasson.
And I'm Michael Reed Dimock, and we're your hosts for a series of conversations that will whet your appetite for much more from the people and enterprises on the cutting edge of agriculture.
This is a conversation with Dror Tamir, CEO and co-founder of Hargol Food Tech from Israel. Hargol is the first company in the world to commercially develop and raise edible locusts through unique and innovative methods and technologies. Grasshoppers are nature's most efficient protein source, healthier for humans and more sustainable to grow. The company offers a line of foods, beverages, and supplement under its Biblical Protein brand. Yeah, Michael, welcome. We're lucky to have him here.
We are, all the way from Israel. Really appreciate it, Dror. I want to start with one question. Is there a difference between a locust and a grasshopper?
Excellent question to start with. You have grasshoppers, about 8,000 species of grasshoppers worldwide. When grasshoppers swarm and change their behavior and looks, we call it locust. There's about 14 different locust species. So you may say that every locust is a grasshopper, but not every grasshopper is a locust.
Wow. Boy, now that's interesting. I'm so glad Michael started off with that question because I was saying the same thing. And I know in the information you got on your website, you refer to grasshopper some and you refer to locust as well. But that's an interesting distinction.
When they swarm and hit, like when they descend on Africa in huge numbers or the Mideast, that's when they're locusts.
Not always. Let me give you an example. In Uganda, there is a local grasshopper, a longhorn grasshopper called Ensenene. They swarm twice a year during the rainy season, in May and in November. Locals just collect them in the wild, in masses. During the night, they're using large lights to attract the grasshoppers in. And in the morning, they just bring them to the markets and sell them. It's a national delicacy. The price is double the price of beef, which is unbelievable. And they have it for about 4-6 weeks a year. That's it. But since those grasshoppers do not change their looks when they swarm, they are not called locust. Many grasshoppers do swarm, but they are not locust always.
Now, I got to ask you another question. I grew up on a farm in Illinois, and it seems like when I was a kid, there were grasshoppers everywhere. And now you don't see any at all. You know, there are never grasshoppers. I don't know if that happens anywhere else other than the heart of Illinois, but I wonder what happened to all the grasshoppers.
I can tell you two things about it. First, grasshoppers do disappear mainly because of the use of pesticides. For example, in Japan, a grasshopper called inago used to be a national delicacy. They used to eat a lot of them, mainly in the rice fields, but because of the use of pesticides, they ran out of it. So today, if someone in Japan wants to eat inago grasshoppers, they import them into the country. And the early settlers in the U.S., in North America, they used to be locusts in the past. And they disappeared. probably the largest locust swarm ever to be documented happened in North America. But since the early settlers, the farmers, started working and operating and farming in the same places where the locusts used to lay eggs, they vanished. So there are no locusts in North America because of that.
Oh, interesting.
Another thing is, when we grow up, we do not pay attention to details anymore. And sometimes we just miss the grasshoppers that are still there.
That could be.
So that's only one more thing. So maybe you should go back to the fields, especially in springtime, and look for the grasshoppers. I believe you'll find a few.
So when did this come to you? I mean, when you started this company, is this something that you've had a fascination for some time, or had you been studying along a certain approach of finding protein alternatives? What got you into this?
I'll start by saying that I'm an accountant, so it was never part of my plan to establish a grasshopper or a locust farm. I never even thought that something like that will ever happen. But if I go back to my roots, I was born in a kibbutz, Kibbutz Ma'anit, in the middle of the way between Haifa and Tel Aviv. My grandfather was the chairman of the kibbutz, and he established two companies. One is called Galam, and he was the first CEO, and today it is the largest corn processor in Israel. Mm-hmm. Later, he established a company called Ambar, which is today the largest feed producer in Israel. So you can understand that agriculture and nutrition and food are in my veins. And I give most of the credit, by the way, to my grandmother, because she was the cook of the kibbutz. And as a young boy, she used to wake me up at 4 a.m. and drag me to the kitchen to crack thousands of eggs. Now, one of the stories they used to tell me as a very young boy was about the 1950s, at the early years of the country of this, and the kibbutz. At that point of time, Israel suffered from famine and also from locust swarms flying in from Africa and destroying the crops. It used to be a huge problem for the young country. Now, when a locust swarm flew in, they used to run to the fields with pots and pans to make a lot of noise to scare the grasshoppers away. At the same time, they saw Yemenite Jews coming to the same fields with sacks and collecting tons of grasshoppers and eating them. So they embedded into my mind as a very young boy that grasshoppers or locusts are food for many people around the world, and that they are the only kosher insect there is. Fast forwarding 35 plus years into the future, I'm a serial entrepreneur for food and nutrition. I'm learning about the protein challenge around the world, and just like that, it came back to me. I know grasshoppers are the solution.
Wow.
That happened 6.5 years ago, and voila.
And we're so there. Okay, and just so people know, because they may not have gotten on the website and done research and watched the videos about your business. Why don't you just describe your business for people?
If you want me to describe the business, it's pretty simple. Grasshoppers are nature's most efficient protein source. They are healthier for humans, most sustainable to grow, and we are the first one in the world to be able to farm them on commercial scale, meaning we can grow large quantities of grasshoppers year-round at a very high quality and constant quality, and we use it as a protein ingredient for the food industry, for humans, not to feed animals.
So what does a grasshopper farm look like? I mean, where you raise, if we were going to go see where you've got all these growing, what would we see?
You see a chicken coop. The thing is this, when we started developing the concept of farming grasshoppers, we decided that some parts of the business we do not need to develop. So we just followed the footsteps of the poultry industry. And if you look at the infrastructure of the company today, we have a breeding facility where the grasshoppers breed and lay eggs. We have an incubator where we accelerate the incubation of the eggs from 40 weeks in the wild to 2 weeks in our incubators, which means we increase the number of annual life cycles from 1 to 10. And we have fattening facilities where the eggs hatch and after 30 days being harvested. And of course, we also developed special facilities to produce the special feed for the grasshoppers.
The thing is, I've had a grasshopper. I was in Mexico many years ago at a big event put on by the slow food movement.
And Chapulines.
And they served them there, and they were delicious. They were had salt and some chili on it,
and lime,
and they were delicious. I really enjoyed them. You said how many people in the world, and do you have a sense that specific type of eating the animal itself, not a protein powder or not part of an ingredient, will that grow in your mind, that consumption pattern?
First, let me give you some numbers, and let me surprise you a little bit.
Okay.
I'll start by figures that I'm getting from the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN.
Uh-huh.
According to their research, 2.5 billion people across the world, mainly in Africa, Asia, and Central America, have insects on their diet.
Wow.
The most widely eaten insect in the world are grasshoppers. About 1 billion people are eating them. You can find them in Japan, in Nago, in Uganda, and Senene, in Indonesia, Belalang, Chapulines in Mexico, Jarad in Saudi Arabia, and many more. In many countries, they are considered a delicacy. They are mostly eaten as a whole, fried, deep fried, boiled, and many, many other ways. And you can find flavors from the chili and lime you mentioned to salty, and all the way to sweet in Japan, by the way. I prefer the recipe you described from Mexico. I believe it is the best one, but you know, this is my own private opinion. And the thing is, they have that tradition, and that tradition goes back thousands of years all the way to the Bible. And the surprising thing is, those insects are coming into Europe and North America as well. If you have a chance to go to Seattle, and the baseball season just started, go to the Mariners ballpark, because for the last 3 seasons, they've been serving roasted chapulines as a snack next to the beer and sausages and hamburgers.
Wow.
And pizza. And it is sold out for 3 seasons now.
Wow.
That's a lot of home games for the Mariners.
That's another reason to wish they get started again pretty soon.
Yeah.
So how much of it would be, what percentage might be in these powdered proteins that you can use in ingredients versus the way you've just described eating them?
Well, I think the powders are something that is very important, mainly for North America and Europe, because the yuck factor is still there. The perception of eating insects as a whole, or having insects as food, is not part of the culture in those regions. And to overcome that challenge, we need to do several things. First one, don't serve the whole insect, because it helps some people to deal with it better. So you can add it in a form of a gummy or a powder or a sausage and many, many other products that we are coming into the market with.
Yeah.
The second thing is, and of course, that's one thing. The second thing is, once you process the grasshopper into powder, you dry it and you mill it, you increase the shelf life from 24 hours, which they have in Africa today, to 24 months.
Wow.
So that's the second thing. And with that, you can enrich a wide range of food products, beverages, and nutritional supplements.
So is it going to be then, let's say, some sort of a chip that a big company produces? They're going to add this so that that chip is more nutritious. It's just not a carbohydrate. It's got some protein associated with it. Or is it flavor enhancement or texture? What is it?
Well, it depends on the animal they're using. If they use the grasshoppers, one of the main advantages grasshoppers have over other insects is their almost neutral taste and flavor. So when you use grasshoppers, it's mainly about a protein boost that you can add to the product. Not only protein, by the way, nutrient rich. It's also omega-3 and omega-6, iron, zinc, folic acid, and many vitamins. If you Google it, you'll see that PepsiCo announced that they have Doritos on their roadmap, and they have insects on the roadmap, and they are already testing Doritos with insect protein. You can find some small startups in North America already offering a variety of chips with cricket protein. Again, but then you have another problem. Crickets have very distinct taste and flavor, so it's really hard to mask that taste and flavor, and they have a limit of how much they can add to the product because of that.
Going back to the Doritos, though, there's a follow-up. Are they doing that to add protein so that they have a more nutritious chip? I didn't get the reason why they're doing it.
Probably that's the main story, yes.
Okay.
I like that story. I eat so many chips already with some salsa. I could just think, oh, now I can, another claim I can claim it's healthy.
And so sustainable.
Yeah, well, that's good. I had it's really interesting. One thing I wanted to ask you is with climate change, we're talking about production patterns of all kinds of foods shifting, and there's going to be a lot of issues in some areas of the world that are going to be in really rough shape. Are there implications for growing grasshoppers, locusts, and so forth from climate change? Or is there some solution that they're offering because they're not affected?
They are affected. The behavior of insects is heavily affected by climate change. Just to give you an example, what happened in Israel in the last 7 years, we had 5 straight years of drought. And insects in general, and grasshoppers in particular, will not hatch if they will not have enough humidity in the ground, in the soil. They are waiting for a set of parameters, humidity, heat, and photoperiode, telling them there's enough food outside. So for 5 years, the number of insects and grasshoppers in Israel was very low. Last year, we had a rainy season, much more than usual. And what people noticed was over 1 billion butterflies flying around Israel. So for 2 weeks, the country was covered by butterflies. They didn't notice that we had 3 different outbreaks of grasshoppers because of the same conditions. Because of the rain, grasshoppers that did not hatch for 5 years just sprang out of the ground. It was amazing. Some villages and cities, mainly the north, were covered for about 2 weeks with grasshoppers. So they are affected. And with climate change, you'll see the shift. And especially in places like Uganda, when they have a tradition for eating them for two seasons in a year, they will not have that tradition anymore because they would disappear eventually with the climate changing. Now, if I'll talk about the way we farm them, the entire operation is done indoors. We grow the grasshoppers indoors. We control all the parameters: heat, photoperiode, humidity, feed. We also grow the feed indoors, so we can actually grow the grasshoppers anywhere around the globe. It's just a question of cost of energy and cost of labor.
So I have a question regarding the feed. They eat grass, grasshoppers. They right. must eat grass, right? So if they eat grass, is that basically you're farming grass? I mean, you're raising grass on these farms, or are you importing it? And is it organic or is it conventional? I mean, tell us about the feedstock upon which they live.
That's a very important question. I must say, you said, well, if they are grasshoppers, they eat grass. Not many people get that, by the way. I usually have to explain it. It's really funny. They eat fresh grass, meaning you need to serve them fresh grass on a daily basis because not only they get the feed from the grass, they also get all the water they need from the grass. So it has to be fresh. 24 hours, that's the oldest you can offer them. The thing is, we need to grow them year round, and we serve them wheatgrass, which usually grows in Israel in the winter, not during the summer. It's too hot. So we have to grow the wheatgrass indoors as well in a climate controlled environment, because it's not just having a season of wheat. We need to be able to produce the same quantity of wheat every day. We grow it very close to the grasshopper farms. We harvest the wheat. We serve it to them, and we do that every day, 365 days a year. Now, this is a very expensive operation, of course. So what we are doing right now, we are developing alternatives. What the poultry industry, again, we are following the poultry industry, they developed dry feed for the chickens that they can produce in factories and feed them year-round. And we are developing, actually, we are teaching the grasshoppers to eat dry food. That's very challenging because you have to teach them to eat something they're not really used to. They have the ability. We notice that in the wild, that they can eat dry stuff. And you also need to teach them to drink from an outer source of water. And we just finished the fourth generation of grasshoppers eating only fresh or dry material.
Interesting.
Well, you know, that makes me wonder about where technology fits into this production systems, because are you able to apply new science, new technology? Do you look on the horizon and say, these are some improvements that we're going to be able to add to our production system or processing system to improve the products that we have and how much, and I don't know, maybe nutritional qualities as well?
Absolutely. When we look at developing our farming systems, we are always looking at other technologies or other fields like poultry and that developed. So, for example, when we look at the cages, we are looking for mutations for grasshoppers that behave a little bit different, that have some advantages. For example, we found a grasshopper. Usually the grasshoppers we found are black, brown and black in color. And we found a very light color, something between white and yellow grasshopper in the cages. So we isolated those, they started breeding, and now we have a new line of grasshoppers that is completely white, yellowish color. We call it blondie, by the way. They grow faster, they grow to a larger size in biomass, and they are about 30% more efficient to produce. And they are even milder taste and flavor. And when we send those as samples to our customers in Europe and the US, the first question back from the customer was, how much do you charge more for this amazing animal?
Wow. Interesting.
So this is part of how the technology or the way other animals were developed into intensive farming, and we're following those. There's a lot of examples like that.
How much of the protein that's required in the world could actually be produced by or supplied by grasshoppers?
Well, first, let me say that I believe that the protein sources that we have today, beef and poultry and pigs and plant-based, will still be there in 30 years. I do not see us changing our habits completely and stopping to eat steaks because it's hurting the planet. We will still enjoy a good steak. And probably we'll still grow the cows, not only lab-grown meat. Mm-hmm. However, I do see a shift and change in the way we consume the products, mainly as ingredients coming into a wide range of food products. I believe about a third of the market eventually in 20 to 30 years will come from new alternative protein sources, with insects being a significant part of that share, of that market.
I understand you're going to launch, or that you have a brand. It was mentioned at the beginning by Roger, Biblical Protein, right? So why don't you tell us about that?
We started discussing it earlier, how you can overcome the yak factor. So we discussed how you actually change the looks of the animal from a whole grasshopper into a powder, and you just add it to food products. But then it's not enough, because still people think about the story that it used to be an insect. So what we did, we actually researched the market and we were looking for early adopters, segments in the population that will be actually very interested in trying products based on locust. Athletes are a perfect example, but the competition around them is incredible. And we decided to focus on something that no other animal has, and that's the biblical story of the locust. They appear in the Bible as the eighth plague in Egypt. In Leviticus, they are mentioned as the only kosher insect in the world, and they are mentioned in the New Testament as the food of John the Baptist. So we decided to call the brand Biblical Protein and offer a range of food products, beverages, and nutritional supplements that includes Israeli locust protein, Israeli honey, and other ingredients that come from the Bible. We started with energy bars and a combo box of whole locusts and honey. And in the coming weeks, we will launch a pancake mix, gummies, and 3 flavors of smoothies.
Wow, and these will be available in the United States.
It is available now on biblicalprotein.com. You can just log in and order.
Okay. Wow, that's so interesting. So, Dror, thank you for sharing with us today. And please enjoy the Ag Innovation Showcase, which is coming up online August 27, 28. And for the folks out there, they can find out more information on Hargul by clicking hargul.com. That's hargol.com. And so please join us for our next episode in the Ideas Energize series.
And to learn more and register for the Ag Innovation Showcase, you can visit via the web, agshowcase.com. That's agshowcase.com. So until next time, thanks for listening.